Hi, welcome to Audio Engineers Podcast number 6 with me, Streaky, and
me, Shay.
Today we're going to discuss loudness. So loudness, mixed loudness, mastering loudness, just so that how do you get things loud?
The needs of the consumer, the DJ, the needs of people, to how loud things need to be.
Yeah, so my nightmare always, might as well kick straight in,
go on,
is obviously I never know how loud people want things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always asking personally for mastering for reference mixes.
Yeah.
So just so that I get a total understanding of what they're listening to. And, you know, I can then get a feel for, okay, this is where they're going. This is the type of sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people are unrealistic about that. And they want something super loud, and there's sometimes you just can't get a mix as loud as you want.
Well, yeah, and it could be just down to the mix that they send to get mastered. It could be just the fact that the, like, say if you get a track that comes in for mastering and it's really, really dynamic, and like the top peaks are quite close to zero, but the main meat and sort of RMS of the track is way down at sort of like minus 16 or something like that, there's no way you're going to be able to get something really loud and punchy, get that RMS up without completely pulling down the really transient-y dynamic top stuff.
Well, that's close you're to always zero. You're always crushing. So do you know the things you can get the loudest are the stuff that's got the most space within the sounds?
Yeah.
So it's about the mixer leaving some space or creating space. So not having as much stuff going in there, and the stuff that they have got going in there is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that, when I say good stuff, I mean, you know, make sure that the drums are, you know, I've got 15 drums in there because they're all taking up space and frequency ranges.
Yeah.
So when you've got that space, then when you're going into a compressor or a limiter, you're pushing into that space and making, and that's obviously making it go louder without having to actually, distort. Yeah. Well, it's make it sound distorted, crushed, and make it have, the harmonics crashing into each other, because that's mainly what's stopping it from going loud in my ears is the harmonics that get come into play and get crushed against each other, which make it sound a bit congested.
So I always think having a good mix level, like at mix stage, having a good RMS level or a fairly good sort of RMS level and like some dynamic range, obviously, but not a vast amount of dynamic range in it. Like, but still get a perceived amount of dynamic range in there. So it sounds nice, clear and open, but you've not got that much space. You've got a lot of headroom. So what would you normally sort of look for, like headroom-wise at mix stage? What about -4, -5?
When they come to mastering, -5, so that I've still got some room to manoeuvre, and there's still some peaks left so that I can cut those peaks nicely with the limiter. And I can still have enough space to EQ, because obviously when you're EQing, you're adding you're adding quite a bit of level anyway. And the way to get something loud is to gain stage it with mastering.
Yeah.
So you're not doing a lot with one thing. So you wouldn't put 10 dB on a limiter.
Mm-hmm.
You would put 1 dB on, you know, the EQ's bringing a bit of dB level, and then you also then got the compressor that's adding a bit of level.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the way through the chain, you're adding level and you're adding sounds. Talks about flavors all the time, and it's just they're adding a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So by the time you come to the end of it, you can then, you've got enough space to be able to then trim it off, trim the peaks off with the limiter and get it nice and loud.
Yeah.
And that gives you a really good perceived loudness without it being crushed to death.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And you're kind of looking for a final master, for something that doesn't sound pushed but sounds really loud, it's like -8 dBU. Or -6 is loud, but that's more for dance music. And you can get dance music a lot louder. Because there it doesn't have the harmonics and stuff like I was just saying, that analog equipment has.
Mm.
So, you know, if it's a totally electronic track, you can push it quite loud and you can really play with it quite a lot with the frequencies, with an EQ to get it sounding really bright and loud and thing. But that's not to say that brightness is the key to loudness, because it really isn't.
Yeah, true. But it's like, as far as like a DJ is concerned, for instance, like when I was like mixing music, like DJ music wise, there would be tracks that I wouldn't, that weren't as loud, mastered songs, but they weren't as loud as other tracks that were in the same genre.
Yeah.
So it would put me off playing them because it would be, I'd have to turn them up quite a lot louder. And I know it was only like a little tweak on a gain on a mixer, but it was that tweak that I would have to make that was, I wouldn't have to make if it was a different, you can't get enough in. Level.
Yeah, yeah. You haven't got enough tweak left to be able to get it loud enough, so you can't play it. I mean, that's what people need to, I think people have realized now, is that they can do it at home and they will get it loud. And they're always worried about it being as loud. And that's always been the way, even with vinyl, you know. And that it was more apparent with mastering, was more apparent with vinyl, because you would always go to a cutting engineer who could get it sounding louder than everyone else.
Yeah.
Especially in the old days of drum and bass and things like that, you know, they'd always go to the engineer who could cut the dub plates the loudest. And there's ways to get things sounding loud on vinyl that you don't need to cut that loud, but you know, that's a whole different podcast.
I kind of agree with that, but from the point of view of a DJ or like a consumer, even a consumer, like, if they were to hear a track, say, on iTunes, for instance, that was a lot quieter. And I mean, like, from a style of music. I don't mean, like, listening to an EDM or, like, a Skrillex track and then listening to an easy-listening acoustic song. Of course, there's going to be level difference. But, like, if you were just listening to dubstep, if you were a dubstep fan and you had an album that came out that was so loud but still really clear, good bass, like, really thick and still sounding open but loud, if there was another one that came out afterwards that wasn't as loud, still sounded pretty good, but just wasn't as loud, it wouldn't be seen as a hard album or like something that was like an awesome album. It would just be, oh, it's okay. It was a bit quiet compared to this one. And like coming from the consumer point of view, it's like, then that it's not a, it would damage how they would see that artist because it's not as loud as someone else's.
But then a lot of the systems these days have sound check on them anyway to stop that happening. So that
I mean, like radio, like radio wise as well, you've got like limiters in radio, which everything comes out at exactly the same level. So there's no worries about those kind of things.
Yeah. And it's very difficult to EQ for that.
Yeah.
Someone will say, oh, can you do me a radio EQ that's going to sound good? Well, you don't know, because everyone's compressors are going to be set up different in every studio. So how you do that, I really don't know. Yeah. Things are obviously a little bit more middly, because the types of speakers that people may listen to a radio on, you know, but that's more old school now, because most speakers can go quite low and quite high. So,
but that's funny though, isn't it? When people do say stuff like, even with mixes, can have a radio mix and a club mix, or a radio master and a club master. Like, well, no, that they're both the same. Like, it's like, both the same.
Well, because the thing is, that's the same with mastering. You're going to EQ something so it plays on all systems.
Exactly.
The best it can do. So even if it's got subs, if the speakers can't reproduce the subs, they're just going to cut them out.
Yeah.
The subs are just not going to be there.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure when you're mixing and mastering something that you're listening on smaller speakers to get around that. So you might put a little bit, say if it was sub bass, you might put a little bit of level a bit higher on an EQ.
Yeah, exactly.
So that you're still getting the feel of that low end, but you're not necessarily going to get, well, the sound of the low end, should I say, and you not necessarily the feel of the low end.
Yeah, just get like
so a, when it's when yeah, it's played on a speaker in a car or something, then it's going to still have the a bass.
Yeah.
Rather than no bass.
It's not going to have that super low, like extra octave down bass.
But then you're only putting that in as a mix engineer.
Yeah.
For clubs or for people that have got those systems.
Yeah.
And if it's correct and tuned right, then you should get a feel of that, a slight feel of that in the higher ranges, because it's obviously not just, you put something in at 20 hertz.
Yes.
You're still going to hear it at 80 hertz. Yeah. It's just going to be a lot less at 80 hertz.
Yeah, yeah.
Than where the peak was.
But yeah, I mean, like what I was saying is that instead of having a radio mix and a separate club mix, just do the club mix, and then it's, you know, it's going to transfer fine on radio, rather than doing a radio mix and hoping it comes out good at in club when you've cut off a lot of the low part. Or do you know what I mean? It's like, just have a club mix, or have a mix, have the final mix. There's no need, like, I mean, mainly in mastering cases, because you probably get asked a lot more than mix wise like they want one radio ready, a club ready one. Well, no, the club ready one would be fine for radio. Like, there's no need to have a separate.
You do get asked for separate vinyl ones, and that's a whole thing.
Oh yeah, but I suppose that's different as well, because you've got to think about the bass and Yes.
Well, yeah. And also you could run a vinyl one. You can run straight from the original track, re-EQ it on the way in and not have a limiter. But so that it's more kind of analog, so you'd be going for more of an analog compression thing.
But then it would go down in volume, wouldn't it? Then because that limiter's not there, you'd have to pull it down.
You're not going
to
get the same sound. That's right. But it depends on the genre then, because if it's a classical track or something that's not necessarily limited hard, then it's not going to be a very loud track anyway.
Yeah.
But that's not true what I've just said there, because a lot of classical music or music where it's acoustic, you'll do a whole album where everything is smashed to pieces and really loud, and then you'll get to the acoustic track because it's got so much space in the mix, it'll sound louder.
Yeah,
the RMS and the dynamics are massive, but I've got loads of range, but it will sound so much louder because of the space around the instruments. As I keep saying, is projecting it louder into your ear. You're hearing more. So then it's sounding louder. Yeah. So then you end up having to pull the level down of that a lot more than some of the tracks that are full tracks and nailed to death. So when you're cutting vinyl, that's something that you'd watch out for, but you could do that more. It could sound more natural rather than having to limit quite a lot on a more acoustic bass track.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to leave a limiter off on a dance track, for instance, because it's more likely just to go into the zeros, digital zero.
Yeah, and you're looking at sort of, like you say, like -6 RMS, like anything lower than -8 and sort of EDM styles is like, it's not good enough. Like that's not loud enough. You need to get it in between sort of 8 and 6, sometimes 4. Do you know what I mean? Like slammed, like really hard, really loud.
Yeah.
Because it does need to stand up against the latest loudest song. It's like,
this is the kind of thing that people obviously think that's what you're doing in mastering, and this kind of, not the people that care, but the people that just want it loud.
Yeah.
They're thinking, just slam it to death. Yeah. And so then what happens is, which is frustrating, is you spend loads of time getting the EQ right and the balance of the track and it sounds really nice and you've got loads of dynamic. And then the person comes back and says, I need another 4 dB.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're already at -8 and it sounds really loud and nice, but they want it smashed to pieces.
Yeah.
And so then when you do then smash it to pieces, they wonder why it doesn't still sound dynamic.
Exactly, yeah. Like, it sounds thin now. You just get that.
It's really difficult because you've got to take some of the bass out because the bass energy is always sucking up more of the loudness.
Yeah.
So you're always trying to balance off between loads of low end and getting it loud, and that's kind of the skill of the mastering engineer, where if you're not accustomed to mastering, you're not going to know that. So you're like, well, I've got no bass now, but the track's louder, but I really like that low sub, and so it's okay, well, it's a bit of a compromise.
You need to compromise, and there needs to be some form of like compensation.
Well, let me tell you how I get around that.
Go on.
I will take a multi-band compressor and I'll just compress the bass so that it brings the mids and the tops up so that you can still get level, but you're making sure the sub notes are more controlled.
Yeah.
And then you add a little bit above that, as I said earlier, to give a bit more of that feeling to the ear that you've got the subs still there, but they're obviously not as present or as wild as they were previously, sucking up the energy, and then they're working the limiter. So what you're better off doing is having putting a multiband just on the low end under 100 hertz, and that keeps the limiter from sucking the life out the limiter.
Yeah.
So the limiter is working on the mids and tops more, and then you get a louder sound and a flatter sound.
Yeah. But then you've got to watch out for the kick drum, like even though it's just a bass that you're trying to maintain, you've got to make sure that you don't completely flatten out the kick drum of the track, because then
even though
it's low, you're not going to get as much sort of driving force for the track. So yeah, it's always a compromise.
That's the balance. Yeah, yeah. That's what you're always listening to, and you're always going from one to the other. And then how far do you take things? And then that's down to your ear to know how far to take stuff. Because you can use, even if you're using a compressor on the low end, you can use it so it's really punchy.
Yeah.
So for a kick drum, I might compress the low end kick to keep the track loud, but it will sound actually better because I've made the low end, I've taken a little bit out, but I've also made it really punchy.
Yeah, yeah. So, in order to make it louder, you turn it down a bit beforehand.
In a touch, yeah. In a way.
Yeah.
So you've got to turn the low end down, but you still got to keep it so that people think it's still there.
Yeah.
So you need to enhance somewhere else to kind of give that feel.
And like with sort of client expectations as well, you need to be ready to be able to say, like, if you want this a little bit louder, then maybe in the mix, like, send me a newer version with this lower or some of the elements sort of taken out or down a little bit, just so you can get more of that level. And then because it is a compromise.
But the problem is, a lot of the times the client won't understand that. So it's very difficult to go back and say that sometimes, because they're happy with their mix and they know that it sounds good. They might have slammed it through something and think, well, I got it that loud before, but you know, they need to realize that, but it sounds terrible. So I've got it sounding nice and at a certain level but you want it louder, but you're compromising your whole mix just for level, which is just ridiculous. And you know, and that's why it's brilliant that loads of these systems have got you know, the sound check thing now, so that, you know, they're all level playing fields. Although, having said that, I'm full of contradictions. I really like Apple, because I don't think that they do it on iTunes for, you know, the music thing when you browse. So I find that I tend to listen to that a lot more in the studio to know what levels people are mastering at. And I want to know the sounds, and I want the true sound. I don't want sound check to have pulled the sound down. I want it to be true to, okay, well, they've got that really loud and it's really clear as well. Okay, who's worked on it? What they worked on previously, go through all of that and then see, okay, this is what they do. You know, look at the videos, look at what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, with iTunes, like, it's the file type that they use is like an AAC file.
Yeah.
So it's like Advanced Audio Codec, I think it stands for. And it's, it's like an MP3. It's like a lossy file type.
Yeah.
But a better quality, better fidelity than an MP3 would be. So it's like in between MP3 and WAV. Like the AAC, so like it is down again to like the clarity and fidelity of the file type that they're streaming.
Just give me a WAV.
I know.
We've got super fast computers with loads of memory on.
I think it's like, just space.
Yeah, high res WAV.
I know, it's just space wise as well, isn't it? It's like, if I could fit, like, I can understand why, like, with an iPod or an iPhone, being able to fit 10 times more tracks on there just because the file size is a little bit different. And like to the everyday consumer, they can't really tell the difference between an AAC file and a high-res WAV. Like, most people wouldn't tell the difference, whereas like I do lectures where we have listening, like, listen to this, the same track, we listen to an MP3 at standard rate, like 256 kilobits per second, an AAC version and a WAV version, and see who can tell the difference between. And I'd say a good 50% of people that are into music cannot tell the difference whatsoever between a high-res WAV and a standardized MP3?
Well, you know, a lot of people in record companies will send me an MP3.
Yeah.
And I'll send it back saying, no, basically, I need a WAV and a high-res. They're like, and they see it as, it's just, they're uneducated enough sometimes where they just think it's just a file type.
Yeah, I know, yes. Yeah, I mean, again, I did a whole lecture on this sort of thing, like, playing back what the artifact is, what an MP3 does, in order to get that size down, what you lose in your audio file. And it'll be nice to have all that stuff that the MP3 decides you don't need as a consumer to hear. It would be nice to kind of have that in as a mastering engineer to then get rid of it if you want to. Do you know what I mean? Like, it gets rid of a lot of the high end, the higher frequencies, and like the bits in between sounds and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, it's one of those things that the everyday person, they just think, well, it's 5 megabytes instead of 60. I'll send that instead. And it's like, well, no, I'd need it as high fidelity as possible.
Yeah. And also, you can get things sounding loud, going, you know, onto the subjects of loudness that. You can get things sounding, the higher quality they are.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
You can get things sounding louder because they just sound better.
Yeah.
So it's easier to work on the file when it's of a higher resolution.
When you've got a clearer and more precise top end to something, as well as low end, but a clearer and more precise to what it was supposed to be,
exactly,
you're going to get a better sound out of it than a compromised file in the first place. All you're going to do is rate like a compromised file, like an MP3. You're going to raise the level of it, and then all you're going to do is just make it more apparent that there's artifacts in there, or that there's a problem with it, or it's a compromised file. Whereas when you turn up a file that's full fidelity, it's going to sound awesome just by default, because there's no compromise to, there's no lost information within that file.
So yeah, of course, you've always got to have a high res WAV and try and send the best quality you can. And that's very difficult to say to people sometimes. I mean, we're, you know, even at Metropolis, we still send out as a master 4416.
Yes, CD standard.
But it's just, why are we at CD standard? No one's got a CD player.
I know.
It's just true, mental. Yeah. It's like, why isn't everybody listening at 9624? And then sizing it down from there if they need to. Well, I mean, sample rate conversion, I suppose, comes into play, that you're going to then end up with some bad system sample rate converting. So at least you're kind of covering that off when you're delivering a lower spec.
Yeah.
But really, come on. It's like, it's 2016. We should all be playing high-res files.
Well, at least sort of 24-bit, 44 minimum, of course, but like 24-bit, 48, I think, is probably the better one to go for, just to be on the safe side.
Because your Apple system would play that, basically, a 48 file, wouldn't it? It wouldn't need, your whole system plays at 48. Mm. So you could do 48, 24, and then it's, you know, it's going to sound okay.
Yeah, really good.
I think a lot of people have got their head more around loudness than they had previously, just because there was so much talk about the loudness war, which is really cheesy. I hate it, the whole loudness war thing.
It's cheesy, but it's there. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's
something that's a problem. Yeah, but I don't think it's there now. I think it's done, isn't it? I mean, everyone knows that, yeah, something's loud, and it's like not everyone's trying to go louder and louder and louder anymore.
Well, I mean, it's just a competition. Like you need to put something out. From the consumer point of view, they want you. They can't degrade on what they've been given beforehand. Like with anything, like you can't give someone something and then give them less than that and expect them to be happy with it. Like it's because from an audio engineer's point of view, it doesn't make sense to make something that loud. Just turn it up.
No, but I actually think that things are louder now, and part of the sound of today is loud music. Yeah. It's all crushed.
Yeah.
So you're kind of, you're at that level anyway. When you get past that level, like you're saying, at -4 or something, it's just nonsense land.
Just like, too loud, isn't it?
Nosebleed. It hurts your head. It hurts anyone's head.
Yeah.
It's just, if you listen to it for too long, it's just headache juice. Like
but if I was to put out sort of a drum and bass album now, that was limited to 0 dB, but I mean, the limiter's doing nothing, and my RMS is at like -12. You get laughed at, and you get like, well, do you,
no, it's true.
Do you know what I mean? It has to be up there. Otherwise, it could sound really nice, but people are going to be like, oh no, I have to turn this one up. Oh, I can't bother with that. It's rubbish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, A&R men need it loud.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the worst things in the world. I mean, most mix engineers have to kind of do a rough master anyway.
Of course, yeah. And it needs to be always up to scratch, because they're going to listen to the track as like, as especially from A&R point of view, like, oh, yeah, it's not too bad, but it's not really as good as this one.
And
it's
and like, that's yeah, but probably the one, level.
Exactly,
that's
yeah.
All that is level.
Yeah, it's like the one you're listening to and comparing it to is a mastered file. Like a lot of the students as well, they'll play me mixes and say, like, I want my track to sound like this. It's like, okay, but the reference you're using is a slammed -5 like limited EDM track, and you're at -3 mix stage. Do you know what I mean? Like, not RMS, I mean peak, like -3 mix stage.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing the right thing, relax, just you haven't got to that stage yet. Turn your master down so that it's peaking at -3, and then listen to your mix up against that. Like, don't listen to it. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to work out. Like, you need to have, you can't send off a mix and expect it to sound as good or as loud as what a master is.
No, but I think, but they've still got to have some kind of idea of how that's going to sound afterwards.
Well, it's like using a reference track, using a mastered reference, at like brought down in level to about -3, -4, and then mixing your track to that reference, but obviously not expecting to get the thickness that you would out of the master brought down in level from your mix. But I suppose it's from, again, just working with you, listening, mastering things and listening to mastered stuff, that you can kind of try and get that sound from your mix. And then when you do pass it on to a mastering engineer, you make their life 100% easier, because all they really then have to do is just get that balance right, rather than having to rectify problems. It's like that thickness is kind of already there. They just need to get it up to level, really. Get it up to that sort of expected and consumer needed level. But without having to, like you say beforehand, like lowering, compressing the bass loads. Really slamming the bass down to control it and making sure that you've got like a peak at one random or two random peaks in the whole file that's at minus 0.1 when the whole rest of the track is at minus 6. Like, you know that when you get to that part, you know that it's going to slam so hard and like that little transient that was there that was really nice in mix stage is going to just lose. It's going to be gone.
Okay, so loudness basically is a compromise from start to finish, trying to get something as loud as you can.
Yeah, trying to do the impossible.
Yeah, but then it's down to experience and learning from other mixers how they get a balance and some space to then say that it goes to the mastering engineer to then be able to push it as loud as possible within that genre by using the tricks that they've got. And then working with the mix and the mastering engineer as well to then, like you say, send it back and don't be annoyed when they send it back and say, is there any chance of tweaking this? Because ultimately, they're going to get it sounding better for you if you do the tweaks to the mix. And it's kind of finding a mastering engineer that you work with all the time to then work with all the time so that you get, okay, I know how that guy masters. So I need to mix in this way because I know that when he gets it, he'll be able to push this and he does that and he does this, then that's going to get you a major result.
Exactly.
And also, if you do work with a mastering engineer, what you should be doing is, you know, a lot of people don't do this, but they should do this. And it's, if you're sending off demos all the time, if you're doing spec mixes for A&R men, and it's a proper, you know, you're a proper mix engineer mm-hmm. and you're getting paid normally, there's no reason why you shouldn't have a relationship with a mastering engineer and you say, okay, well, can you just do rough masters for me on some mixes that I've got to present? Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to doing the actual thing, then we'll do a proper one.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, or you just say, okay, I've got, you know, just kind of work together with a mastering engineer to get that, vibe going, because it's, there's no point in you trying to do a rubbish master on something after you spent ages on the mix just so the A&R man likes it more, because he's not going to like it more. And if you've got this relationship with the mastering engineer, they're going to smash it in a great way and it's going to sound brilliant and you're going to get much more work.
Yeah, and if you're at that stage, like with the master and engineer wise, like you've done it a few times beforehand, you know that what you're sending him is what he's going to expect to receive, if that makes sense. He knows exactly, like the mastering engineer is going to know exactly what the style he's going to receive, the RMS kind of level, the peak level he's going to get. And he's probably would have a standardized startup settings for that particular person that he knows, right, always this guy's mixes are this kind of style and they've always got this kind of top end to it, this kind of low end to it.
And I know what he likes.
Exactly,
I know what he's trying to present. And I know what music he's into and I know what styles he likes. I mean, that is just... You have to have these relationships because it will just mean that you get better work.
Yeah, and everyone's happy at the end of the day. Master engineer gets what something that he would expect to receive or that he would expect to send to someone himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He'll be getting something that is good and a joy to work on. The mix engineer knows that he's going to get a really good product out of it because he knows that the master engineer is going to like what he receives and everyone's happy.
Yeah, you're going to get loud masters, basically, and you'll get, and the A&R man's going to get loud mastered mixes to listen to, and you're going to smash all the other mix engineers out of the park when you're in that meeting, because your track's going to be fully mastered, and everyone else's track is going to be sitting there with minus three.
Yeah, hard, minus three peak.
So for the A&R man who hasn't got a concept of something being mixed and something being mastered, it's a joy.
It's a no-brainer straight off the bat,
So that's it, loudness, all in one little nutshell. If you've got any questions, let us know. Please subscribe. Please leave us a review on iTunes if you can. That'd be handy. And until next time, thanks for listening. Cheers.
Bye.